Why don't we talk about joy? That's this retreat is about joyful stillness. Let's talk about joy. And when I say joy, what I mean by that is what is called in Pali language, piti. The language of the Buddha was called piti. And joy is basically the English equivalent of piti. But sukha is the word in Pali that means happiness. Okay, so piti and sukha go together, and so do joy and happiness. But in English, people use the words joy and happiness. They're not precisely, there's not a clear distinction between them. And they're often used as though they mean the same thing. Do you know? You understand what I'm saying? Very often, people use joy when they mean happiness, happiness when they mean joy, and don't think much of it. But in Pali, the two have very different meanings. Because joy is a state of mind, and whenever you have that state of mind, you have happiness. But happiness is a feeling. So piti is a state of mind that results in the feeling of happiness. So they're not the same thing. And actually, if you look in the dictionary in English, the same thing is true. If you look in a really good dictionary, you'll see that the definition of joy and happiness are different, and they're different in the same way. That joy is more a state of mind, a mental state, and happiness is a feeling. But specifically why we're interested in joy, piti, is that it is something that arises as a part of meditation. And it's a very important part of meditation. At a certain stage, the mental state of piti arises, and that corresponds to a stage in meditation where your concentration becomes really good. And the way that meditation is usually taught, and the way that it's described in the texts, you know, the older texts, you practice concentration, and when your concentration becomes good enough, meditative joy arises, piti arises, and along with it comes the experience of seeing light, having strange sensations in your body, energy movements, and things like this. But the state of mind of joy comes as a result of having achieved a certain degree of concentration. But what I have found is that the reason the two arise together is because they're very closely connected. And that actually, if you deliberately cultivate joy in your meditation, rather than just waiting for it to come up, if you cultivate piti, that will improve your concentration, and it will accelerate the process of you becoming a very skilled meditator and being able to enjoy the results of meditation. So, do you follow me, what I'm saying? Yes.
So, by observing your breath, or like paying attention to your own soreness on the body, How do that will enhance to the level like what you just described?
Okay. Well, the way it progresses, and Peter, I think you have a copy of the 10 stages of meditation, or have you seen that?
No.
No, you haven't. Okay. Well, make sure that you get a copy, okay? It's available on the internet, and I'll make sure you get it. Okay. As your concentration improves, you'll get to a point where there's no more pain in your body. As your concentration improves, there are fewer thoughts, fewer other distractions come to take you away from the breath, and it becomes very easy to stay on the breath. And you can stay on the breath for very long periods of time with very little effort. And if there is any thought comes, it's like a whisper in the background and you can just ignore it. Now, what is happening before that is there's different parts of your mind that are not on track with the meditation project. So here you are trying to pay attention to the breath, and some other part of your mind wants to think about some problem, or wants to make some plan for tomorrow, or so on and so forth, as you're already experiencing. These are different parts of your mind that don't care about meditation. They have their own agendas. And so those thoughts and ideas keep coming up. Now, the reason that after a while there are much fewer of that kind of thoughts is that all your mind is becoming unified. All of the different aspects of your mind are now starting to focus on the same thing at the same time. They come to be with the meditation program. And that's actually what causes the piti, the joy to arise, the unification of mind. If you think about it, whenever you do something that, you know, for example, a hobby or something like that, that you just get totally involved in, you know, you enjoy doing it, you're totally involved in doing it, there's really no other thoughts in your mind at all, you feel very happy, right? A strong feeling of joy.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is exactly the same thing as piti. When we become focused on something in such a way that everything, our mind's concerns with everything else falls away, and then we get into the flow of it. And by the flow, I mean it just, whatever it is we're doing, it just happens naturally, almost by itself. You know, that's what the word flow means. Then we have a really strong feeling of joy and happiness associated with it. And this is what everybody out there is looking for anyway. This is why we take up various kinds of hobbies, things like that, is we try to get into flow with something where our mind becomes unified and that natural state of joy and happiness arises. So it is exactly that same everyday life experience that is a parallel to that that's happening in meditation. When your concentration reaches that same degree of focus, and when the process of meditating becomes a flow activity, you're following the breath in and out, totally relaxed, no effort, it's just happening, then a very, very strong feeling of joy and happiness arises. So it is the same thing. But first you have to go through the stages where your concentration is not good. First you get past the stage where you have long periods of mind wandering. Then you have the stage where there's not so much mind wandering, but you still keep forgetting what it is you're doing for short periods of time. Then you reach a stage where you don't really forget the meditation object, you don't really forget what you're doing, but your attention is not always focused on it. Sometimes the meditation object, the breath, is sort of in the background, and there's some other thought that is stronger, that's more in the center of your attention. But then you get past that, where you're always just staying right on the meditation object. Now you're getting very close to where the mind will unify and piti will arise. And as a matter of fact, it can happen to any meditator at any time. If you happen to get into that place of flow where you're able to stay with the meditation object, you're alert, you're aware, you're completely relaxed, and it's just no problem at all to stay, even for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you'll suddenly start to feel joyful and happy.
So when you describe the meditation object, that means the object itself is a breath?
Is the breath. The sensations of the breath.
Yeah, sensation.
Right.
But it could be other objects.
Well, yes, you could be doing a different kind of meditation with a different kind of object, and the same thing would be true. But the object that I'm talking about...
Or it could be chanting.
It could be chanting, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We we always mention concentration. And I think if you have an understanding regarding the meditation or the Buddhism, they're always talking about concentration, and then you can reach
the joy
right. of whatever state of mind.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult and hard to believe or to experience. Only concentration can reach that. So I think the concentration is only a training. The concentration itself carry a training process.
Yeah.
And so the concentration is carry a function of training process. So concentration here, joy of the state of mind here. So what is the process? If you only say we concentration on our breath, we concentration and we relax, those mind wandering don't come, they still come, okay?
Yeah.
When you go outside, still come very often. So I cannot concentrate. People usually cannot concentrate. So I'm just try to find out or try to see what is the training process?
Okay.
Well, to skill.
Yeah.
Well, not a skill, no? Your experience to reach there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, concentration, eating concentration rice can reach the joy of mind. It's very difficult to experience, to understand. Am I right? So training, this is training.
As you start meditating and training, you'll have experiences that help you to understand. So it gets to be easier to understand all the time.
Happy to help to understand.
But think of it this way. Concentration is not the goal. It's not the end. Concentration is the means. It's the training. It's the practice. The goal is the unification of mind. Or the first goal is unification of mind. And so you practice concentration to get to achieve unification of mind. Where your mind is all, every part of your mind is working in harmony. Doing the same thing at the same time. And then concentration is no problem. Concentration is as easy as could be. Because now there aren't different parts of your mind trying to go in different directions. So think of it that way, that the goal or the objective is the unification of mind. And practicing concentration is how we get there. And of course, when you get there, concentration is easy. But once your mind is unified, you don't even need to focus on a single thing anymore. You no longer need to do that. Once your mind is unified, you can open the focus up so that you're taking in everything at once. Or you can allow your mind to go from one thing to another thing to another. And every single thing, when it lands on you, will be totally there, 100% with it, just like you've been meditating on it for the last hour. And when you move it to something else, the next thing as well. And it only goes where you intend it to go. So once your mind is unified, you're finished with training and concentration. And you can be concentrated if you want to.
When we say unify, what do you mean unify?
Unified in the sense that as long as your mind is wandering, as long as you have different thoughts that have nothing to do with the meditation going on in your mind's not unified. Different parts of your mind are trying to go different directions, do different things. That's what I mean. So the goal is to get all of your mind together doing the same thing. It makes your awareness, your consciousness, very powerful when that happens. Because now it's all focused. And think of it as a side effect of unification of mind is joy. It just comes along with it. It's like a bonus. It's like an extra. Okay? Okay.
That state of mind that you just described, unification of mind, for the people would that be maintained as like very stable when you reach a certain stage, or is that because sometimes if I focus on something, I do have the unification.
You do have that, yeah.
Yeah, but just last for very probably a short period of time.
Right. That's right. probably everybody at some time or another experiences a unification of mind, you know, and the joy and satisfaction that come with it. But it's usually dependent upon what it is they're doing. Something outside themselves is helping them to achieve that. And so it doesn't, you're right, it doesn't last. You know, you're doing something, you're very focused on it, the unification of mind occurs, and then you get tired, you go do something else, and there's no more unification of mind. So one difference is that in meditation, you're training the mind to do this independently of any outside thing you happen to be doing. And it does last. Now initially, in meditation, when you're sitting, you'll experience very strong unification of mind and PT. And you'll get up and it will last a little while, but it will fade. But the more you meditate, the longer it lasts and the more available it is the rest of your time. Yes?
You know, you talk about joy, unification of mind, and mindfulness. It is the same thing as when you're watching a good movie and you're totally absorbed. Or you're reading a good novel, you're totally absorbed.
It is basically the same thing, yes. It's basically the same. When you're reading a crummy novel, you're thinking about other things at the same time and you're feeling dissatisfied and you're not really liking it that much, right? But when you're reading a good novel, it's just everything else disappears. You just go right into it and it makes you very happy. So it's the same thing, yeah.
So the purpose of meditation is try to have that unification of mind last for very long. Or like when you deal with also different kind of person or things, that you can maintain that unification of mind.
Let's think of it this way. The ultimate purpose of meditation is to become fully enlightened. A person who has a unified mind has a very powerful mind, and they can gain the insight that leads to enlightenment. The more fully unified your mind is, the more powerful it is, and the more time, the more of your life that you are in a state of unification of mind, the more opportunities you have for the insight that will result in awakening. So, yeah, your goal is, it's like the unification of mind is one step. And, of course, just achieving unification of mind one time while you're sitting and meditating is not worth that much. It's wonderful, but it's not worth that much. Being able to consistently achieve unification of mind, even for a little while, quite often in meditation, that's much better. But being able to achieve a unification of mind that carries over even when you're not meditating, that's best of all. So, you know, once you've achieved it, you want to keep cultivating it. Okay. Does that answer your comment there? Yeah. Now, okay, so if you're clear on that, what I want to back up a little bit and say, usually the approach in meditation is you practice concentration until the mind becomes unified, and then PT arises, joy arises. But what I found is if at the same time that you're practicing concentration, you also practice cultivating joy, you get there much more quickly. It speeds everything up. The reason is, a unified mind is a joyful mind. But also, a joyful mind is more unified. Whenever your mind is joyful, you don't have all these different parts of your mind wanting to do something else, think about something else, go somewhere else, right? When your mind is in, and remember, joy is a mental state. When your mind is in the mental state of joy, all the different parts of your mind are really happy to be completely present with what's happening right now. So joy also helps, although unification of mind produces joy, joy also helps to bring about unification of mind. So we use that. So that's what I wanted to talk to you about tonight, is how to intentionally cultivate joy, develop joy, be in some state of joy as much as you can while you're meditating, so that your meditation will progress more rapidly and improve more quickly. So that's what I want to get to here. So, you know, I call this stillness and joy. First, we try to slow down all of the frantic activity of our mind, bring about a certain state of stillness in body and mind. But at the same time, we want to bring joy into that, so it becomes a joyful stillness. And this will advance your meditation much more quickly. Now, question is, how do we cultivate joy? Anybody have any ideas how to cultivate joy?
It's a secret. You want to hear. No.
Well, if you understand, the more you understand about what joy is, then the more obvious it becomes what you need to do if you want to cultivate joy. As I said, joy is a state of mind. And what puts your mind in that particular state? When good things happen to you, your mind, the more good things that happen to you, the more joyful your mind becomes, right? What's the opposite of joy? Sadness? When bad things happen to you, you become sad, you become very unhappy. So the mental state that you're in is affected by the kinds of experiences that you have. Now, once the mind is in that mental state, then it behaves in a particular way. So I'll just point out what that is. When your mind is in a state of joy, now you think about a time that you were joyful about something. When your mind is in a state of joy, wherever you are, wherever you go, you tend to see things that are nice, beautiful, pleasant, wholesome, good. You tend to ignore the things that are ugly, dirty, broken, so forth. A person is joyful, just you naturally, you walk into a room and you say, oh, isn't that beautiful? Oh, that's nice, you know. It's just the opposite of sadness. A person that's very sad, they walk into a room and they say, oh, that's no good, that's... I hate the color of the wall, the picture is ugly, you know, everything. Right? So your mental state determines, first of all, what you pay attention to. And a joyful mind pays attention to good, positive, wholesome things. Then, the second thing that happens is that no matter what you pay attention to, in a joyful state of mind, you are going to notice the positive aspects more. So, you know, if you have a glass that is half full, in a joyful mind, you see it as half full. In a non-joyful state of mind, you see it as half empty. So, that's... You meet a person, you're talking to them, and if you are in a joyful state of mind, you are going to perceive this is a good person. This is a nice man. Whatever circumstances you're in, you are going to have this more positive perception. The third thing that it does, so it affects what your attention goes to, it affects the quality of your perception, and the third thing it affects is the feeling that it gives you, you know, the happiness or unhappiness or neutral feeling that is associated with it. When you're in a joyful state of mind, something that would ordinarily be just mildly pleasant is very pleasant. In a joyful state of mind, something that ordinarily might just seem ordinary, in a joyful state of mind, seems pleasant. Something that might under other circumstances seem mildly unpleasant, seems neutral. You don't really mind it. Something that would otherwise seem very unpleasant seems only mildly unpleasant. So you see what it does? It shifts the feelings that are elicited by all of your experiences in the positive direction. So, you know, you think about somebody gets some really good news and they're in a state of joy. That everything is wonderful. Everything feels good. They love everybody. Breathing, have you ever heard somebody say, it feels good just to breathe, it feels good just to be alive? Because we all breathe all the time, but when we're not in a joyful state of mind, breathing's just breathing, who cares? But when you're in a joyful state of mind, every breath is a pleasure. It shifts you in that way. It's exactly the same, exactly the opposite of what happens if you are in a dread, depressed, sad state of mind. If you're in a state of grief, you have just the opposite effect. So this is what I mean. Joy is a state of mind. It's a state of mind that tends to perpetuate itself the same way sadness and grief perpetuate themselves, or anger perpetuates itself. If you're in a state of anger, then things tend to annoy you, and your anger just keeps on feeding on itself. The same thing happens with joy, because you're going to pay attention to the more positive things. You're going to feel better about whatever it is you pay attention to. You're going to see things in a more positive way. It reinforces the state of joy. So this is how we can cultivate joy. Once we get it started and then just keep it going, it can become stronger in itself. Now, normally we all experience mild states of joy. A few good things will happen to us and we'll start to feel in a good mood and you know, we'll have a mild effect of that. But it's vulnerable to something coming along that is unpleasant and negative. It can destroy our good mood. So it has this fragile quality to it. So if you start out in meditation, to cultivate joy, you need to pay attention to pleasant experiences. If your body feels good, notice that and continue to be aware of that. Even while you're putting your attention on your breath, in the back of your mind, in the background of your awareness, you're noticing how nice it feels just to sit here and be quiet. If there are some good feelings in your mind, then you become aware of those. And this is how you cultivate joy. Whatever is pleasant, you give it more of your conscious awareness and you reinforce it. And it will help to gradually induce in your mind a state of joy. As your mind becomes more joyful, the quality of your meditation is going to improve. Your concentration is going to be better. And of course, because your concentration is better, it's going to produce more feelings of happiness, satisfaction, peace. And this is the point at which you can start to build on itself. But you have to move it along. You have to get it started by always focusing on the positive and doing the best that you can to avoid negative thoughts. You know, so if you find yourself thinking, oh, I'm not any good at this, that's a joy-destroying thought. And so you should try to let go of the thoughts and feelings that are negative when they come up, to the extent that you can. Usually, they're not all that strong. There's just a feeling of restlessness and dissatisfaction comes up. Before it's too strong, you can just recognize, oh, this is just a feeling that I'm having. And if I identify with it, if I say, I am restless and dissatisfied, it's just going to get stronger. So instead you say, oh, there's just this feeling of dissatisfaction, and I'm going to focus on something positive, like you know, how relaxed I feel, and ignore that feeling of dissatisfaction.
So?
Yes.
So you can turn the muscle pain when you meditate. You can turn that into the joy of state of mind.
You turn your muscle?
Muscle pain.
Muscle pain?
Yeah.
Yeah. What you want to do, pain is unpleasant. So what you want to do with pain, if you can ignore it and pay attention to something else, then do that. See, usually even when there's pain in your body, there's also something that feels pleasant as well at the same time. So if it's possible to pay attention to something that's pleasant rather than the pain, that's a good idea. But very often it doesn't take very long before the pain is drawing your attention. That's why, as I was saying last night, when you pay attention to the pain, you want to observe it objectively, not as I am hurting, but as, oh, there's pain arising in this part of my body. So that you're creating a separation through being objective. And you watch to see when your mind is resisting that, and your mind is saying, oh, I can't stand this. This is a stupid idea sitting here. Oh, I need to get up and go do something else. You recognize that all of these kinds of thoughts are going to be counterproductive. And so do the best that you can to remember that they're not true and that you don't have to believe in them, and do your best to let go of them. And it gets easier as you go along.
So it's mean concentration the pen without any bias, judgment.
The concentration?
Concentration on the pen.
Yeah.
New choice.
Yeah.
New choice.
Yeah. What happens?
Aesthetic.
What happens if you concentrate on a pain and you do it the right way, objectively, is, first of all, before you started concentrating on it, you might have thought, well, this is too much. I'm not going to be able to stand this for maybe another minute, that's all. But when you concentrate, first of all, you find, well, actually, I think I can stand it longer than that. That's the first thing that happens. And then if you continue to concentrate on it in the right way, then you begin to see it more as a collection of sensations. Yes, it's unpleasant, but it's just sensations. And you have this realization, well, it's all right for those sensations to be there. I don't have to resist. I don't have to fight against it. If you continue in that way successfully, one of two things will happen. One is that there'll still be sensation, it'll still be unpleasant, but it won't bother you at all anymore. At which point, you can probably come back to the breath. The other thing that sometimes happens is it just dissolves and it stops being painful at all. It's just a sensation. It's not even an unpleasant sensation. It's just a sensation.
Which stage is more advanced?
Which stage is the more advanced is when it's just a sensation, it doesn't bother you anymore.
Or sometimes energy will just shoot through it and you'll be astounded.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes it'll just, it's like energy goes through it, blows it up, it's gone.
I had a pain in my back. I think I had my back was in pain for 20 years. And I was just, I'd been to chiropractors, massages, everything. I spent thousands of dollars on my pain in my back. And one time, I'm just sitting and meditating, and the energy shot up through my back, and it was like, holy smokes. But I wasn't even doing anything. I was just sitting here. It was just, and then the pain was gone. And I was amazed, because I've had that pain for so long.
The real why I ask the question is that, but last night, CC asked it.
Yeah.
The pain is very easy to feel. But it's very complicated. If you apply that to the real life, or for the achievement to the joy of mind.
Yes,
it's a small soldier, but it's a big king, you know? So yeah. Sometimes you deal with the wine, use the right method knowledge, probably you can learn something. This is my experience.
Yeah.
Right?
What will happen, and I can't quite explain how this happens. I don't really know. But it does happen when people have been meditating for a long time. I just don't feel any of my pain, any pain at all in my body when I sit. I can sit for hours. I can sit for 2 or 3 hours And when I stand up, my legs aren't, my feet's not asleep, my leg's not asleep, you know, my joints don't hurt. As a matter of fact, very often I feel, you know, energized as a result of sitting. I can't quite explain how that happens, although I think how it happens is that in meditation, there is a movement of energy. And I think when the chi is moving properly in your body, legs don't fall asleep, and joints don't hurt, and things like that.
But your body do not resist.
Yeah.
Falling, you are settling everything.
That's just my theory.
Maybe, so you already told.
No, maybe going to this kind of stage, maybe it take a while.
Yeah.
But for the beginner,
for a beginner,
I would think about if your mind and your health condition, if you can make a healthier, maybe it will help the meditation. Am I correct? Like you read some good book or do some good exercise, make your health condition healthier.
That's right.
And maybe that way will help with like meditation, more stable, something like that, right?
That's right. If you do exercises, if you do yoga or qigong or anything
like
that.
Yeah, and read some good book, maybe change your mind, thinking certain way, maybe something like that, right?
That's right. And actually the same thing is true of joy. Don't just cultivate joy when you're sitting in meditation. Try to remember to cultivate joy all of the time. When you find yourself dwelling on unpleasant things, you know, there's always something pleasant you can pay attention to as well. And, you know, you can change the way that you think. As a matter of fact, what you pay attention to that's what determines the experience you have. Where, you know, we know how two people can be in the same place and have totally different experiences. It's mainly because they're paying attention to different things. And if you pay attention to positive things, it creates that joyful state of mind. And the more you do that, the better it's going to be for you. So pay attention intentionally. You know, you learn to pay attention to your breath when you're sitting. But when you're out there in the world, pay attention to the good and the positive and the wholesome things wherever you are. And if you find yourself dwelling on something that is negative or problematic, ask yourself the question, is there something I can do about this right now? If there's not, just let go of it. No need to hold on to it. Don't carry it. If there's something you can do about it, do it. If there's not, let go.
Regarding the pain, I also want to share experience. Today you told me don't move, right?
Yeah.
And I forgot last retreat, I was told not to move. So whenever I feel uncomfortable, I move a little bit. And today, after I talk to you, I try not to move at all. Of course, at the beginning, I feel pain, I want to move, but just like what you say, I don't resist it, I observe it, and I took it. I don't want to think about, like, say, oh, I'm going to lie down, I want to lie down,
right,
or something like that. I just took it, not resist it, then it will gradually dissolve. And so I could sit still, not move. Yeah, just by taking it.
So you found what I'm saying works?
Yeah, uh-huh.
See? Many people find that this works. You just have to have a little bit of faith and try it for yourself.
Well, when you say not move, would that include that you do not try to move your chi, that part of the breath?
Because you really try to move, it's mean you resist.
Yeah, not your body, but your internal how you breathe.
You can try moving your chi and see if that helps. There's nothing wrong with that. Don't get caught up in it, though, because then all you do is you sit there trying to find the way to move your chi to make the pain go away. See, this is what's wrong with moving. You sit still, and the pain comes, and you think, I don't want this, I want to get rid of this, so okay, I'm going to take my leg off. Say, oh, that doesn't hurt anymore, well, that's good, okay. Except then this leg hurts, or your back hurts. Mm-hmm. And so this is a dead end. The only place it leads to is that every few minutes you're moving something else, right? So it's better to sit still and get to the point where the pain just dissolves and goes away. That's what I'm encouraging you to do. Now, along the way, before you get to that point, you might reach the point and say, okay, this is it, enough for this time, and go ahead and move your leg. Say, next time, I'll try not to, but this time I have to. And that's what I mean. Make the move very mindfully. And notice, and when you do that, notice exactly what I say, that a few minutes later, there's going to be some other pain. And so you realize that the only thing that moving leads to is more moving. And it does not lead to an end of pain. It just leads to, you know, it's like you're always trying to run away from the pain. You know, and it keeps catching up with you, you keep running away again. It catches up with you, you run away again. So that's the thing about moving. Now with something else, like the chi. If you have, for example, you might have pain in your back or your neck. And this is a kind of pain that very often, if you can move the chi through it, it lets go. So if you can do that and it lets go, that's fine. But it's the same thing as moving. If you find that, well, now it's just another pain coming back, and so you end up, well, I spend my whole meditation period moving my chi up my spine to get rid of this pain, and you say to yourself, okay, this is another dead end, because I'm going to end up doing this forever, and it's not getting any better. There is a point that you come to where you really feel the chi moving in your body. You really feel the energy. And when it begins to move strongly, sometimes it will produce its own pain. Because if there's a blockage and the chi can't move, and this is a different kind of pain than just comes from sitting still. You're sitting there meditating, you feel the energy moving, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got a strong pain in a place that you didn't have before. And the best way to deal with that, if it is a pain that's coming from the blocked movement of energy, use your mind to move the energy through it. Or what I find sometimes you do is focus your attention on the other side of the block. And the more you focus your attention on the other side of the blockage, then the more the energy starts to come through the blocked place, and then it lets go.
Question, how do you explain or describe this situation? Okay, this afternoon I purposely put one leg on the other leg.
Yeah.
Okay? And subconscious mind say, okay, I'm waiting the pain to come. Okay? And then once the pain to come, I how to try to see how to handle it.
Yeah.
But the pain never come. What happened to the mind?
I think it's because you weren't resisting it. You were saying, okay, you can come if you want. So it didn't come. Yeah. It's really true that when you resist it, then it's intense. And if you let go of that resistance, the pain very often goes away. So I think the only thing that I can think that was happening in your case is because you were expecting it. When it came, you weren't going to fight against it. You were just going to sit there and work with it. It just didn't come. So, I think that's why it didn't come.
Maybe that moment is relaxed. That's why no pain.
You know what will happen is you'll be working with pain and you'll be paying attention to it and focused on it, and it goes away. Great, that's wonderful. So then the next time you meditate, there's another pain. You say, okay, I'm just going to pay attention to it and it'll go away. And it won't go away. Because, you see, you're really resisting it. You're wanting it to go away. The first time you were just looking at it and you didn't expect it to go away. But it did. But then you look at this other pain and you're expecting it to go away. Well, now it's not going to. Because you're really still resisting it.
It seems today many people have great achievement. Right?
In which today? In...
Today, everybody experience different and have a great achievement to get away the pain this afternoon.
Well, yes, that's a great achievement.
Yeah, a great achievement, right?
It is, it's wonderful.
Do it
again.
They'll become Buddha very soon.
I mean, my wish is that you all very quickly get to the place where there's no more pain. You look forward to sitting down because it's only going to be pleasant.
So you gave us a secret that by cultivating the joy, that will accelerate the process or to improve your meditation. But how in the background of your thought when you meditate, or how does that combine together with the cultivating of the joy into the, the process of the
meditation? That is a very good question. So even when you're concentrating on something, like you're concentrating on the breath, you're still aware of other things at the same time. It's just naturally the case. As a matter of fact, you want it to be that way. Because if you become too concentrated too soon, then you'll just forget what you're doing and mind wander, or you'll fall asleep. So you want that awareness to be there. Okay, what is that awareness going to take in? Well, this is where cultivating joy comes in. That if there is pleasant feeling in your body, you want that to be what's in the background of your awareness while you're concentrating. If there is a feeling of peacefulness or happiness in your mind, you want that to be in what you're aware of in the background while you're concentrating. So, yeah, you're keeping all of these positive experiences of every kind. I mean, that's just two examples, but anything that is a positive part of your experience in the moment, you know, in this reality right now, anything that's positive, you're encouraging that to be there in your awareness. And that's how you cultivate the joy. And then, as your ability to focus gets stronger, like if you're observing the breath, you can start to see more and more details of the sensations of the breath, but without losing this background awareness of the comfort, pleasant, peacefulness, things like that. Yeah.
I'm wondering, something I've always had a problem with is kind of, you know, focusing on physical sensations is okay. I understand that part. Mm-hmm. Kind of watching the thoughts come and go, that makes sense to me. But focusing on a feeling, I'm really not quite sure. Like,
what do you mean by a feeling?
Well, for instance, the feeling of joy, mm-hmm. of pleasure, of happiness.
Okay, there's a little distinction here. It's, I'm not meaning for you to focus on the feeling. Are meaning for you to keep an awareness of that in the background. Okay? Now, does that seem... is that something you don't quite understand or that you have difficulty with?
So that would mean just being aware. So when, mm-hmm. you know, I feel pleasant.
Yes, you're introspectively aware that, I feel pleasant. You know, what you want to do is you want to be aware of the state of your mind. If it's restless, you just notice that and let go of it. If it's pleasant, then you want to sustain that awareness in the background.
But sort of, at one point though, you said to me, like if I have a sore knee, well maybe, you know, focus on the other knee because it's not sore. You know, I'm aware that my knee, one knee is sore, but so I go to my knee that isn't sore, and I'm aware of it rather than spend all my time there.
Yeah, that's...
I'm on the one that isn't sore.
If you can keep an awareness
of the same
positive bodily sensations, pleasant bodily sensations, it will help not to have the unpleasant ones intrude. But you're still focusing on the breath. Unless you need to change the focus.
Okay.
So essentially, you know, once you start to feel the an arising of joy, you would continue what you're doing, but also just become aware, okay, joy has arisen, and just kind of keep checking for it once in a while, or stay aware of it.
That's right. It's yeah.
Just let it kind of happen.
Just let it happen. That's right. But continue to be aware of it. It's like focusing your eyes on one object, but taking in other things in your peripheral vision. So you have your attention focused on the meditation object, but the joy and all the happiness or any other pleasurable things that accompany that, you want to sustain them in the peripheral vision of your mind, your peripheral conscious awareness.
Okay, so the joy kind of becomes like the screen, let's say, you know.
It becomes the background. It becomes the background to the experience of meditation. And the other things that arise in association with joy, when joy starts to become strong, there are pleasant bodily sensations, and there may be light, there may be sound, things like that. What do you find with those? If you have the experience of a bright light seems to form, if you go chasing after it, it will tend to disappear. But if you just keep on what you're doing, let it be there, it'll grow stronger and stronger. It will grow strong enough so that you can focus your attention on it at some point. But the only way that it gets there is you let it increase in the background. The joy, and there's also pleasant sensation in your body that's an important part of this. And the same thing is true there, that you have to let that develop by itself without chasing it after it, at least until it reaches a certain strength. When it becomes strong enough, then you can actually shift your attention to that sensation in your body and investigate it. But if you do it too soon, it'll fade away. You'll lose it.
Yeah. When you focus on the breath, do you count a number? Like because yesterday you told us like counting 1 to 10, and like count to 100 or 1,000?
Not to 100 or 1,000. What I suggest is that whenever you begin to meditate, first time you sit down, close your eyes, and settle your mind, focus your attention on your breath, and then you might count 10 breaths to help settle your mind. And then stop counting and just observe the sensations after that. Then if you find at some point that your mind is agitated, or you're getting a lot of hits. If your mind has wandered and you've been lost in mind wandering for 5 minutes, and then you suddenly realize it, you might count 10 breaths again just to help stabilize your attention. But to try to count more than that, what tends to happen is the mind can just count automatically and you still forget the breath anyway. You know, so I find 10 is there. 10 is a really good number, and you know, somewhere between 5 and 10 at least usually is enough to quiet the mind, and you have a really good feel for the quality of your concentration from that. So then after that you want to just let go of the counting, because it's not going to help that much after that. You can always do it again if you feel like you need to because you're agitated. There are some meditation teachers that teach very complicated counting methods, so that you would count 10 breaths, and then 9 breaths, and then 8 breaths, and then 7, and then 6, and then 2, and then 1, and then 2, and then 3, and then 4. So you go up and down in complicated systems. And those, they do help some people to stay concentrated on the breath, but it really limits, you know, you want to get to the place where you don't have to do something like that. So I think it's better that you count a reasonable number of breaths and then you stop the counting, rather than become dependent upon some really complex system. Because really, if you're involved in, some complex way of counting, you're not really doing the practice the way you're supposed to.
Anybody have any other questions?
I'd like you to try this out. Just, you know, from this point on, no matter what you're doing, just cultivate joy. Wherever you are, you know, when you're outside walking, make sure you notice just how beautiful things are, how good the sun feels, how nice the breeze feels, all the beautiful things that you see. Cultivate joy in that way. And then when you sit down to meditate, in front of the time you first sit on the cushion and think, oh, actually, this feels good. Yeah. Don't worry about the fact that maybe your back will hurt after you've been sitting for 5 minutes. That doesn't matter. Right now you first sit down and then relax. Let go of all the tension. Say, oh, it feels so nice. There's no tension in my shoulders, nothing in my back. This is good. Oh, let go of the tension in my forehead too. Oh, that feels good. Yeah. That kind of thing. So, you know, and then you look at your mind as you're breathing, you know, in, out, think, oh, mind is getting quiet. This is nice. I like this.
Is there a difference between a joyful state of mind and good attitude?
Well, usually when what I think of as an attitude is more a point of view, a way of understanding things, whereas joy as a state of mind is more just the state that you're being in. Now, if you have a good attitude, you can. That's part of cultivating the state of joy. You take the point of view that, okay, I know that there's a lot of positive things around me, and I know that it's to my benefit to pay attention to those, and preferentially rather than things that are unpleasant. So that's the good attitude, and that's the good attitude that will lead to the state of mind. But the state of mind doesn't involve a kind of thinking. It's just more a way of being.
How about just, you know, being appreciative that we have the opportunity to practice? Is that an attitude or is that a state of mind?
You know, I it could be either one. It could be both. So, yeah, it depends on how I think it should be a state of mind. Might start out as an attitude, becomes a state of mind, and you're really grateful for the opportunity to practice. Yes?
Oh, no, I was just going to ask if it's attitude just requires more effort, and state of mind is like it just happens without effort. Like, not without effort, but it just kind of happens without you taking that extra effort.
I would agree with that. It's an attitude is more, you know, you're doing something, you're adjusting your viewpoint. So there's a kind of mental activity taking place. Whereas the state of mind is just, it's just being and not so much doing.
Yeah. So one is more contrived.
More contrived, yeah. That's a good way to put it too. More effort, more contrived, more intellectual, involves more thinking, things like that.
Yeah. How do you have a joyful state of mind when you're extremely busy, when a person, say, have to do 80 hours or work a week and then there's, you know, many, many deadlines? It's not easy to have a joyful attitude when there's so much.
Well, because you're trying to sustain a joyful state of mind in the face of a lot of stress and tension and problems, that all of which tend to destroy that state of mind and create a different state of mind. Create a stressed out, aggravated, you know, state of mind. So that's what makes it hard. Because your mind can only, it can be in one state or it can be in another state. So
you put choices.
So now if you get good at cultivating a joyful state of mind, then, you know, you'll be able to go longer and deal with more things before it gets eroded away. So if you're working 80 hours a week, you're really pushing it because you're not leaving a whole lot of hours to relax and cultivate the joy. You're having a lot of time that's going to be eroding it. So that's a really big challenge. But the more the more joy that you can cultivate, then the more difficult circumstances you can tolerate without completely losing the joy. You don't really need to work 80 hours a week.
You need more time for the meditation.
You only have one life. So many days, so many nights, so many breaths, so many heartbeats. You don't even know what the number is. So you need to, you're an accountant, you need to budget. Yeah. Otherwise you spend it all on ways that, and you'll be sorry. Yeah.
I think what he's talking about makes a really good point. You know, do we not, if we're serious about our Dhamma practice, basically kind of steer ourselves away from those types of situations and more into situate, you know, if possible, where we can more focus more on our mm-hmm. practice, you know. Especially if we work in the corporate world.
Yes.
You know, and which I also do.
Everyone has this problem, no matter where you work or what you do. What are your priorities? And how do you allocate your time? And you need to look at what your priorities are. And you know, if Dharma practice becomes a major priority, then when it comes to a choice between Dharma practice and something else, you're going to give up the something else. To the extent that you give up the Dharma practice for the sake of something else, hopefully you know what it is you're giving it up for, and you're really clear that indeed it is something that is important enough that you want it, that justifies it, rather than just going on automatic because, well, this is what everybody else expects, this is what everybody else thinks, you know, that to be a success at something, what does that mean? You have to decide what success for you, what you need. And then just because everybody else thinks that you should keep doing more, that would be a big mistake. You need to decide for yourself, is this what you really, really want to do?
So, it is a matter of choice of lifestyle.
Yes. It's choice.
And this costly.
It's based on your priorities. And it requires that you look very carefully and you don't delude yourself. Because it's very easy to delude yourself, and it's very easy to be influenced by other people. For children, it's very easy to be influenced by parents. Husbands are influenced by wives. By, you know, if you're part of a corporation, you're influenced by the corporate philosophy and the attitudes of the other people you work with. You have all of those influences. And you need to look and say, okay, am I doing what I want to do, or am I being driven by other people and other people's expectations? When you know what you want to do, then it becomes simple.
Probably we do have a lot of choices, but for instance, probably you don't have to answer though. If you were a priest or like someone that go to the Iraq to teach those army that who are in the field.
Yeah.
What do you? What will you teach them in that kind of very fierce confrontational part of the world?
And to teach soldiers in Iraq?
Yes. Yeah. For instance. They don't have much choice.
That's right. They don't. They've already made decisions that have limited their choice because they are there. There's a whole structure that determines almost everything, and they have very, very few choices. But they do have choices. And what I would do for people that have already put themselves in that situation is I would teach them to develop mindful awareness. Because the more the more mindful that they are in whatever situation they find themselves in, the better will be the quality of the decisions that they do make. So somebody else decides for them where they're going to go, on what day, who's going to go with them, and so on and so forth. Circumstances happen to them that are beyond their control. But then when they're in a situation, especially if they have weapons, it's really important that they be clear. The more clarity of mind they have, the more likely they are to survive, the more likely their associates are to survive, the more likely they are to make good decisions that don't bring unnecessary harm to civilians, for example, all of these things. So that would be the best thing that I could offer, I think, to people in that kind of situation. You know, and we're all already in situations that limit our choices. So may not be as limited as a soldier in Iraq, but we're already, we've made certain commitments, we're in situations and our choices are limited. So the more mindfulness we can bring to the situation, then the better that we're going to make of that situation. That's my
question. I have a question regarding to the object of the object that we take to have joy. It seems like certain objects are more dangerous than others, like certain things are very very fragile. And if we take joy in it and then it falls apart, then that joy can turn into kind of like a misery. So is it true that the simpler the thing that we take joy in, the more reliable it is?
Well, if you think in terms not of, you know, if you think, it's how you're using it. If you take joy somebody praising you, that's not a very good thing. Or if you take joy in physical objects or sexual activities or things like that, I mean, that's going to happen anyway. That's not really cultivating joy. Cultivating joy is recognizing the positive and the good and the wholesome in whatever situation you're in. In these other kinds of things that involve attachment and there's the risk of change and loss and things like that, you're actually better off practicing equanimity. So when you're in a situation where people are praising you, if you take delight in it, then you set yourself up to be hurt. Whereas if you practice equanimity, then you know your ego doesn't get inflated and you don't set yourself up to be hurt. Cultivation of joy is just look for the positive, appreciate the positive, pay attention to that in everything. And it doesn't mean the same thing as pursuing sensual pleasures and ego gratification and things like that. Okay. Well, I hope that this discussion is helpful for you and that it will have a positive impact on your practice. And I would suggest now that we, the bell's almost going to ring to start a sit, but I know some of you need to stretch, go to the washroom. So we'll go ahead and we'll sit together, and if you need to stretch or go to the washroom, do that, but come in pretty quietly after, okay?